You're listening to U Talk, part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Providing unbiased opinions on all things Utah football and basketball.
Welcome to this edition of U Talk. Joining me today, this is Grant Bagby from Torn by Sports, and joining me as usual is Joseph Silverswig. And honestly, Joseph, you got so many things going on right now, I don't know what to introduce you as. So why don't you let our audience know what you do?
Yeah, I'm busy. I am running www.pac12blog.com, just covering the Pac-12 and doing a lot of my stats and analytical work on the all over the Pac-12, all the different teams and research questions. I'm also writing for Ute Nation, which is the Utah Rivals site, and covering games from the press box, home games from the press box. So if you follow me on Twitter at Jay Silverswag, and you'll catch all of that.
Sweet. Well, also we're both on Twitter. Feel free to look us up there. I'm at Grant TBS for Torn by Sports, and Joseph. What's your Twitter handle? Honestly, I don't look anymore.
It's at Jay Silverswig. That's J-S-I-L-V-E-R-Z-W-E-I-G. Or you can follow the Pac-12 blog at p12blog.com, which is easier to spell.
A little bit. But hey, so let's get in it. To give you guys what we're going to be talking about today, we're going to do what we're going to call our quick hitters. Talk about a couple news items real short that we feel Ute fans might be interested in. Please let us know if we're wrong. And also, we're gonna hit the rivalry, talk about the history, whether there's any value to it anymore, and then get straight into prediction time, what our keys to the game is. And obviously, we're going to hit a score prediction. What kind of Ute Talk podcast would this be without that? But so let's get straight into quick hitters. We're going to hit two topics for you. The first one being former Ute defensive coordinator, former Utah State head coach, and Wisconsin head coach Gary Anderson, who is looking to be struggling up in Corvallis with the Oregon State Beavers. They lost to Colorado State in what was close at the half and then ended up being a blowout. And then they had to come back from about 20 points down to beat Portland State, who lost to BYU. And we'll get to that in a little bit. But, hey, I've been looking at their schedule, and I'm just wondering how much longer Gary Anderson's going to have a job after this season. Minnesota, Washington, Washington State, USC, Colorado, Stanford, Cal, Arizona, Arizona State, Oregon. I was talking to an Oregon State fan and said, hey, you know, maybe you're going to win the Cal game, and who knows what happens with the Arizona schools. But Cal beat UNC. I don't see a lot of wins there. And let's just say, Mike Riley, who's the coach before him, he didn't give them any losing seasons, and he did, but he didn't give them three in a row.
Not like this.
And here comes Gary Anderson, who's about to drop a potentially only 2-3-1 season.
Yeah, I think that he's definitely on the hot seat up there. It's a shame everything that happened at Wisconsin. The bright side is Matt Wells is losing games pretty badly over at Utah State, so there might be a job waiting for him up in Logan. He might get to go on home, and that was a good fit for him. I don't know why he's struggling so much at Oregon State. He's got decent talent. He's recruiting well. He's got good coaches. But they were on the rise. I thought they'd be doing better, but they just look bad this season. I think that their performance against Portland State was worse than the loss to Colorado State. It's probably going to be a pretty good team at the end of the day. It's a bad one. But the other news is NFL cut day was Monday, I think, Saturday, the first. And some Utes got cut. Tim Patrick got cut off the Niners. Couple other guys got cut here and there, but most of them got picked up on practice squads. All 8 Utes who were drafted are at least on the practice squad. Most of them are still on the roster. Pete T is on the roster at San Francisco. One news from the NFL is that Joe Williams is going to be on IR this season. He did something to his knee or his ankle, and he's going to miss the season. But he is on the he's off the roster on IR, not off the roster because he got cut. The U Football Twitter was talking the other day that you could actually field a complete offense and a complete defense out of just players who graduated from the University of Utah. And that's pretty impressive. I'm not sure how many other Pac-12 schools can say that. I'm sure USC can, and then maybe one or two more, but it's not many. It's quite a feat.
Well, not only can they fill the team, but they even have some depth. I was looking at the corner depth.
Let's just rotate
through corners.
Offense is a little weird. You got to play two tight ends, and you don't have a lot of the wide receiver position. But, it's a sort of a 50s or 60s style 3 yards in a cloud of dust offense. Or maybe you run the triple option because you got Alex Smith. But the defense is good. The defense is pretty good. I think there's some teams that would rather have a Utah football NFL defense than the defense that they've got. I'm actually going to be doing, over the next couple of weeks here, an analysis and see if I can't figure out how good that team would be. And they'd probably win 3 or 4 games, but it's cool to be able to field an even borderline competitive team just with players from your university.
Totally. Well, that's our quick hitters. Tell us if there's anything you want to see on the quick hitters this coming next Wednesday is when we record. You can either hit us up on Twitter or utalk@gmail.com. So let's get into the meat. It's rivalry week, holy war time. And recently here on, I believe it was Rivals, yeah. Joseph, you had an article analyzing the history, and I mean, let's just put it this way: if you're listening to this podcast and Joseph's on it, you're expecting some numbers. So let's hear about the article. Tell us what the numbers are telling you.
So what I did is I took every score result and I broke it down into eras, and then I ran these models that essentially, well, what if they played in that era 10,000 times instead of 10 times or 6 times or 15 times? What would the average scores have looked like? How often would one team have beaten the other? And what was interesting about it was watching the movement. I mean, the BYU was really dominant in the rivalry during the Lavelle Edwards era. They won tons of games. There was one stretch where they won 5 games in a row by an average of 27 points. There was another stretch where they won at least 9 games in a row. I mean, it was a very, very dominant time, particularly the early part of when Lavelle Edwards was there. But then, when Ron McBride got hired, the whole thing changes. You go from an average scoring margin in this model that I did of about 12 points for BYU to suddenly an average scoring margin of 3 points for Utah in the Ron McBride era. So they're close and exciting games, but Utah tends to win a little bit more than they lose. And then since Kyle Whittingham and Bronco Mendenhall have been hired, it's just a totally different story, and the line just keeps moving. What I find interesting about it is that people tend to think of the rivalry as close. They remember the games that are really, really close, like, oh, well, remember the two-point conversion last year and the Bechtahar line and then these incredible moments where everything came down to the wire. And what kind of fades into the background are the blowouts. I mean, you remember 54-10, and it was fun, and it was enjoyable for Ute fans to watch. But it's not; it doesn't sort of stick in your memory and define the rivalry. But the reality is that those blowouts have been happening a lot more frequently lately. We've had a blowout; you blow out every 3 or 4 years or so. And what that means is that there's essentially 3 ways these games go. BYU wins a close game. Utah wins a close game, or Utah takes them to the woodshed. And that's not a close rivalry. That's a heavy Utah lead. And since Utah's joined the Pac-12, they win their games by, I want to say, an average of about 13 points if you do this 10,000-game model. So it's it's really been dominant, and not just in the sense of six in a row, but in the sense of the scores of these games aren't close. And I think that you're seeing the reflection of a total change in the relative talent of these two teams, and they just don't play the same brand of football anymore. And you can see it as soon as they walk out on the field.
Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting, the history of it, and I'm just, you know, we're talking about sevens coming, but looking at the six in a row, you know, you've got a 1-point game, then 54-10, then a 3-point game, then a 7-point game, then, sorry, my quick math, that's another 7-point game, and then a 1-point game. So, I mean, we're within a touchdown, so the rivalry's still been close with the exception of a 54-10. I'm wondering how much on, you know, statistical analysis here, sample size of those six, how much 54-10 might be skewing things.
It does a little bit on the Pac-12, in the Pac-12 group, but when you even if you do 2005 on, which is a good size sample, that's the whole Whittingham era and then mostly Bronco Mendenhall era, Utah's still winning by an average of over a little bit over a touchdown. It's just not as close as we think of it, because these blowouts happen, and because BYU doesn't get them. BYU hasn't beaten Utah by more than a touchdown since 1996. It's been over 20 years since BYU has won by more than 7 points. And that's telling. That's a long time to go without an extra pick six to tack on. I mean, the best they can do is close. And then some of these close games aren't actually as close as you think. I mean, my favorite memory, I'm a pretty young Ute fan. I grew up in New York, so I wasn't a Ute fan.
So when did the Ute fandom start for you?
I would say 2004. I mean, I was in school before then, and I was paying attention, but I am a 2004 Ute fan. Or the first season tickets were 2008, which was a good year to have my first season tickets. I didn't see that coming, and it's been building since.
I mean, that's interesting. I mean, we might have to get at Raider Ute on here on Twitter, just to give us a Utah historian, because, you know, we're going to get to talking more rivalry. I mean, I've only been a Utah fan since I started going to the U. I'm originally from Virginia, so two East Coasters now supplanted in Utah following the Utes. So, you know, 2005 is when I was in. 2008, I was in the Must, enjoying that one, which, you know, to talk about some of the favorite memories, I mean, that takes you to mine, which is kind of, you know, Sly going over there to break up the Hakko, and BYU comes into
that was such Rice a spectacular Eccles moment.
I mean, it was just, you know, being in the stands of the Must, we weren't pleased to see them trying to do the Hakko. And yes, the Must was there, and there were some fans there yelling, and then they start doing the Hakko, and then we start seeing Sly, and then a couple other teammates start walking to go over there to break it up. I was like, that's right.
I've seen this photograph on Twitter quite a bit lately, but there's this shot of Sly in the middle of the field, and the entire BYU roster is just walking away, and it's this whole sea of blue and white, and this one you right there, and they run away, and I think that that really captures the spirit of the rivalry lately, because it's been like that. It's been these special players that BYU just doesn't have an answer for. Last year they were on the goal line going for that 2-point conversion, and they just didn't have an answer for the defensive line. They've got Taysom Hill, but it doesn't matter, because on that one play, when it really counts, and those four guys are going to do everything they can, they're going to get past the O-line, and there's not going to be anywhere for Taysom Hill to go, and that was the game. For me, something that I've felt watching these games is that a lot of times we'll say these games are close when they don't feel as close as they are. One of the most satisfying wins as a Ute fan for me was 2013, because we knew there was going to be this hiatus, and we knew how big it was going to be, and everybody kept talking about, well, it's, you know, this is the last chance for all of these players to experience the rivalry. And I thought that win was dominant in exactly the way that that a Ayuk fan would want it to be, because it was just physical. It was a low scoring game, so it wasn't ever going to be a blowout. But even when the Cougars were driving just down 7 right at the end of the game, I never really felt that twist in my gut, because I'd watched that whole game and I'd seen the Utes defense just dominate them every single time, every single snap, anytime they needed to. I think that game ended on a pick and then some kneels, and that was the end of it. So not the most exciting game, but for me, I just love that physical, grind it out kind of football, and that was my favorite.
Yeah, so, I mean, look, there's always moments. I'm sure there's going to be moments we're going to remember from this year's game, even depending on whether or not we predict, there will be a moment or something that people will remember. Mm-hmm. And but here's the thing that's kind of interesting as we talk about, you know, memories, the closeness of these games versus maybe they're not that close, you know, and specifically since joining the Pac-12, what is your opinion on the value of the rivalry game at this point?
Well, the rivalry game has value. Everybody cares about it. I mean, I get more engagement from fans on social media this week than any other week. And I mean, people care a lot. And I think that the few Ute fans who say, "Oh, I just don't care anymore," well, you're not really telling the truth. You do care. But what I think has changed is that we found a new level of caring. It's like Spinal Tap. The dial goes to 11 now, where there are these games that aren't just about, you know, bragging rights at the office or, you know, at the family reunion, but are about the Rose Bowl and the playoffs and beating USC. Or it's just these extraordinary opportunities to be part of something that is so much bigger and that doesn't have... It's the difference between, you know, having a fight with your brother in the backyard, which is intense and you're never going to forget it, and you're going to get some bruises and it's going to be a big deal, and being a boxer, you know, in Vegas in a real bout. It's suddenly this is the real deal, and it's not that BYU has gotten less important. It's just that there's so many other things that matter more, and there's 9 games a year now that, if Utah wins them, they at least go to the Rose Bowl, and if not, have a chance at winning a national championship every single year. And they don't need this team to lose or that team to lose or this to fall just right. All they've got to do is win the games in front of them, and they're national champions. And the rivalry seems small compared to that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is it's kind of it's not going to be at the end of the season. It's not going to decide a conference title. It's not going to decide whether the Utes are in a BCS bowl. I would like to say that maybe that happened for BYU, but they never could make that happen.
They're not guaranteed to get a BCS bowl. I mean, they have almost no shot at getting a BCS bowl unless they get into some conference.
Well, I'll make the correction that you're talking about the playoff.
BCS bowls.
I'm referring back to the day. But now it's like you said, right? There are bigger aspirations now, and the BYU game doesn't stand to stop those aspirations. So what does it do to the rivalry game? You know, I think it lowers the intensity. In how intense it is. I mean, I will say personally, and maybe I just have learned to manage my Twitter following and my social media interactions better, but I haven't been seeing as many of the the 10 or 5%ers that cause so much of the issues with the vitriol and the hatred. It's interesting to see. I mean, another thing just to say this is I feel like also the players up until recently have really, you know, mouse zipped. You don't give the other team any bulletin board material. We're not going to do anything. But yet, maybe it's just a little bit younger of a team or a little bit more swagger. I'm not 100% sure yet. But the players have been saying a little bit more things, and and yeah, I think back to like Tyler Huntley. He's like, we just don't lose to that team down south, right? Or I mean, are there any others that you can think of? Or
I can't remember exactly what he said, but Darren Carrington had this quote about how he'd been paying attention to what they were going to say, and he was going to show them what was what. I mean, just as much swagger as much confidence as you can think of. I was thinking about this last night, and I realized these guys, it's not just that these guys haven't lost to BYU, although none of them have. It's that none of the guys who taught them about the rivalry lost to BYU. Most of the players who have experienced losing to BYU graduated 2012 or earlier. You know, guys like, I think Trevor Riley was on the 2009 roster, graduated in 2013. Jordan Wynn was on the 2009 roster. I mean, these are not Derek Tuimago. These are not players who we think of as recent players. And these are guys that the players now don't even really know. I mean, they might see him on the sideline. They might see him on TV on Sundays. But they're not the people who are sort of imparting to them the spirit of the rivalry. And losing to BYU isn't in the institutional memory of these players anymore. It's the coaches remember, because a lot of them are involved in the rivalry and played in the rivalry on either side and then won or lost those games. But there's something so different about your coach telling you you could lose to a team than the senior who you respect telling you you could lose to a team. It's not history; it's a legend now. It's a scary story that the coaches tell. You know, you pay attention and you respect the process, or you might lose to BYU. I mean, it's a boogeyman at this point, and it's pretty hard for a player like Tyler Huntley, who's been kicking tail and taking names since he was 3 years old, to think much of any story like that. And so I don't blame him. My feeling is probably won't have an effect on the game, but it's telling into how long it's been since it's really been competitive.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. I mean, with some of the players' comments, as much as it's swag or confidence, however you want to phrase it, there's a part of me that, you know, maybe this is the pessimist coming out, especially as I see, you know, Dalai Lama is selling a 7 is coming shirt, and I'm just like,
you've got a lot of confidence.
I'm a little worried, right? Because you flip a coin 10 times, it has to land on the other side a few of those times. And, you know, here we are at 6. I mean, maybe if you want to go back and say 10, you got another, a couple times it landed on the other side. But there's just the pessimist in me that says, I don't want to overlook these guys, especially after the LSU game. So I only watched bits and pieces. I can only be entertained, but so much.
That was a hard BYU game
lost.
To watch.
I mean, heck, ESPNU was planning on rebroadcasting that game last night, and instead went to the Tennessee Georgia Tech game because they would have lost any viewers had they thrown BYU LSU off.
As an entertainment product, it was hard to watch.
Yeah. So I mean, after the LSU game, Portland State, and then the Utes playing North Dakota, what are we expecting to see? For the rest for this game, I mean, I'll start off. Kind of my key to the game is, and this is a cop out. Kind of everyone says this, right? And the battle's in the trenches, right?
Well, everybody says it because it's right.
The trenches won the game last year.
Uh-huh.
The trenches cause the havoc that creates all the turnovers the Utes have been enjoying many of the years since joining, especially since joining the Pac-12, but. So what is this D-line, and then even more so, what is the Utah offensive line going to do blanking out of the BYU player's name?
Taki.
Yes, Taki Taki.
He's good.
He's really good. He's showing he's really good. BYU's defense, 71 snaps against LSU, was pretty freaking impressive against LSU, and that's a legit defense, and we're playing a freshman quarterback and an offensive line that just hasn't gelled yet. Granted, it's been one game.
I think we're going to run a lot. I know that we've been telling the Troy Taylor is an air raid passer story for a while, and I think he is,
and I think as we hit into the
conference schedule where you start to see defenses with suspect secondaries, you're going to see that. But while the feel of the LSU game was sort of this back-and-forth brawl, they put up 496 yards on BYU. They got a lot of yards, and they all came exactly one way. It was just zone runs right up the middle, hat on a hat. There's some big, strong dudes who go to LSU and play football, and they just dominated them on the defensive line. And I think Utah's O-line, from a talent perspective, is pretty close. I mean, it's not LSU. They're a top-10 recruiting team, and every single one of those guys is an NFL prospect. We're not quite there. Although we did put four in the NFL last year, and I think there's at least three who are going to play in the NFL by the time their career is done. But one thing I noticed reviewing North Dakota film was, man on man, this O-line is great. I mean, but Paulo can beat anybody, and Uitafe can beat anybody, and Barton can beat anybody. Where they struggled was dealing with stunts and blitzes. So you've got a linebacker coming, and the tackle's got to shift over there, and he kind of passes off his defensive end to the guard. Well, the guard is turned the wrong way, and the defensive end just zips right by and is in the backfield. But that's not a talent issue. That's a coaching issue. And that's when people say, well, the offensive line needs time to gel and they need to communicate better. That's the kind of stuff that they're talking about. North Dakota runs a really well-coached team. They're not the most talented because they're FCS, but they're really well-coached, and they run a really sophisticated defensive front. They had a ton of stunts. They had all sorts of crazy stuff going on that the Utes weren't ready to handle. And when you saw players in the backfield, if you go and you slow it down, maybe one or two times somebody got beat. But almost every time it was somebody missed their assignment. BYU runs a more vanilla, more traditional defense, and if Utah's going to run the ball 60% of the time, and I think they are, it doesn't matter because there's no pass rush. It's just, can our guys push your guys out of the way? And I think the answer to that is yes every single time. And I thought Zach Moss looked spectacular. I don't think that the BYU is going to have an answer for him. And if Utah runs down the field, 14-play, 75-yard drive the first time, just running the ball, and then they get a quick 3-and-out, 4-and-out, 5-and-out, and then they run down the field again, 14-play, run the ball drive, you're going to hear the boo birds going, and everybody's going to be hanging their head. And that's what I think is going to happen, because I don't think BYU can stop them. I mean, can they get to Huntley? Sure. But I don't think they can stop them when they're running the ball with Zach Moss.
Yeah, I mean, it's setting up. I think it's actually going to be a tighter game than I think Utah fans specifically thought after watching that LSU game. I think I feel like the LSU is probably the bottom.
Right, that's got to be the low point.
That's
got to
be. It can't be
that.
That's
what I
exactly. And so what's going to happen? So some fun predictions. Question for you. Will there be a targeting call?
Oh, yes. Yes. Not in the first half because Hanneman's out. But as soon as he gets back in, he's going to find somebody and try and take their head off. That guy is a lunatic and should not be on the field. But what are you going to do?
Well, I'm not going to go that far. But they do need it. I mean, Scally yesterday after practice even said they have a drill where they teach them how to lead with their shoulder and
how to go into
the right contact zone. I think... I don't know if they started that drill after Kalani left, but he might want to put that in place down in Provo. Otherwise, what would you say if you were going to pick who the player of the game's going to be, make that player pick and give us a score, and I'll follow with mine.
Well, I think I went with the guy I was saying. I think Zach Moss. I think that Utah's just going to run right up the gut, and Zach Moss is going to beat him over and over and over and over and over again. He's going to get over 100 yards, a couple touchdowns, and just take over the game. Final score, I'm going to say 31-24 Utes win.
Okay. So I'm going to cop out a little bit on my key player of the game, and that I'm saying it's going to be the secondary.
All right.
I think I mean I want to pick a player, and you know, but I think it's really going to be the safeties. I think it's just going to be the group of safeties rotating around, flying around, whether it's Marquise Blair or Corian Ballard or whomever. Those guys are. I just have a feeling that there's just going to be some good hits. Not targeting hits. Good hits.
They're clean.
And
mean.
And there's going to be some turnovers all because of those hits. Hey, I would love for some interceptions, but I just have a feeling it's going to be like a shoulder to the ball, and that ball is going to pop out, and I feel like it's going to happen a few times. Uh-huh. That's just my feeling. Gut feel. As far as score, you know, to go back to a classic score of recent rivalry, I think Utah's going to score 35, but I think this time BYU is only going to score 17.
That's so, a big win.
I think it's a bigger win. I mean, for me, a blowout is when you're not scoring more than 6 points. For me to give a blowout, it has to be monumentous for me to say that. So to me, that's not quite a blowout, but that's a pretty commanding win. But either way, we'll see what happens. We're both looking forward to watching it and looking forward to talking about it next week. And hopefully we're just not talking in a depressive
loss. Oh, man, that voice. Would be sad. Well, I think the secondary is a good pick. BYU doesn't have a lot of weapons on offense, but that Bushman.
Yeah, the tight end.
He can play. He's 6'5", 200-something, and he's tough to cover. I think Chase Hansen can cover him man-on-man. I think Marquise Blair can cover him man-on-man. You watch the defensive film from North Dakota. Marquise Blair was all over the field. He is so fast. And he's big. He's 6'2", 200-something pounds. I mean, he can handle himself.
Well, to combat that a little bit, something else to keep your eye on him is listening to Sports Bros podcast as much as – Utah fans wouldn't normally listen to a BYU-oriented podcast. This week might be the week to do it. But
for sure.
They had a former BYU quarterback. I'm blanking on his name right now. I can't remember. Uh-huh. Sorry, Sports Bros. But he was talking that something he's concerned about with Tanner Mangum is his feet. He's not setting his feet. He's not making the throw. He's getting jittery. He's worried about the pass rush. So if that's the case, you know, more to that secondary point, right? If our D-line gets some rush on him, he's not setting his feet, he's thrown a little early, trying too much to be perfect, and next you know it, that secondary once again being a huge impact on the game, as it has been for several years.
There's a lot of good players back there, and they're going to be here a long time. I think it's going to be a real strength of the Utes over the next few years.
Yeah. All right, well... this is this edition of UTalk. Please get a hold of us either via Twitter or email utalk@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your feedback, make the show better. And you'll be hearing our next episode next Thursday after the rival game. And we'll be looking forward to, I believe, San Jose State. We'll talk to you then.
Mighty Spartans. Got picked up on practice squads. All 8 Utes who were drafted are at least on the practice squad. Most of them are still on the roster. PDT is on the roster at San Francisco. One news from the NFL is that Joe Williams is going to be on IR this season. He did something to his knee or his ankle, and he's going to miss this season. But he is on he's off the roster on IR, not off the roster because he got cut. The Ute football Twitter was talking the other day that you could actually field a complete offense and a complete defense out of just players who graduated from the University of Utah. And that's pretty impressive. I'm not sure how many other Pac-12 schools can say that. I'm sure USC can. And then maybe one or two more. But it's not many. It's quite a feat.
Well, not only can they fill the team, but they even have some depth. I was looking at the corner depth.
Let's just rotate
through corners.
Offense is a little weird. You got to play 2 tight ends, and you don't have a lot of the wide receiver position. But you know, it's a sort of a 50s or 60s style 3 yards in a cloud of dust offense.
Or maybe you run the triple option because you got Alex Smith. But the defense is good. The defense is like is pretty good. I think there's some teams that would rather have a Utah football NFL defense than the defense that they've got. I'm actually going to be doing over the next couple of weeks here an analysis and see if I can't figure out how good that team would be. And I mean, they'd probably win 3 or 4 games, but it's cool to be able to field the even borderline competitive team just with players from your university.
Totally. Well, that's our quick hitters. Tell us if there's anything you want to see on the quick hitters this coming next Wednesday is when we record. You can either hit us up on Twitter or utalk@gmail.com. So let's get into the meat. It's rivalry week, holy war time. And recently here on, I believe it was Rivals, yeah. Joseph, you had an article analyzing the history, and I mean, let's just put it this way: if you're listening to this podcast and Joseph's on it, you're expecting some numbers. So let's hear about the article. Tell us what the numbers are telling you.
So what I did is I took every score result and I broke it down into eras, and then I ran these models that essentially, well, what if they played in that era 10,000 times instead of 10 times or 6 times or 15 times? What would the average scores have looked like? How often would one team have beaten the other? And what was interesting about it was watching the movement. I mean, the BYU was really dominant in the rivalry during the Lavelle Edwards era. They won tons of games. There was one stretch where they won 5 games in a row by an average of 27 points. There was another stretch where they won at least 9 games in a row. I mean, it was a very, very dominant time, particularly the early part of when Lavelle Edwards was there. But then, when Ron McBride got hired, the whole thing changes. You go from an average scoring margin in this model that I did of about 12 points for BYU to suddenly an average scoring margin of 3 points for Utah in the Ron McBride era. So they're close and exciting games, but Utah tends to win a little bit more than they lose. And then since Kyle Whittingham and Bronco Mendenhall have been hired, it's just a totally different story, and the line just keeps moving. What I find interesting about it is that people tend to think of the rivalry as close. They remember the games that are really, really close, like, oh, well, remember the two-point conversion last year and the Bechtahar line and these incredible moments where everything came down to the wire. What kind of fades into the background are the blowouts. I mean, you remember 54-10, and it was fun, and it was enjoyable for Ute fans to watch. But it doesn't sort of stick in your memory and define the rivalry. But the reality is that those blowouts have been happening a lot more frequently lately. We've had a blowout. You blow out every 3 or 4 years or so, and what that means is that there's essentially 3 ways these games go. BYU wins a close game. Utah wins a close game, or Utah takes them to the woodshed. And that's not a close rivalry. That's a heavy Utah lean. And since Utah's joined the Pac-12, they win their games by, I want to say, an average of about 13 points if you do this 10,000 game model. So it's really been dominant, and not just in the sense of 6 in a row, but in the sense of the scores of these games aren't close. And I think that you're seeing the reflection of a total change in the relative talent of these two teams, and they just don't play the same brand of football anymore. And you can see it as soon as they walk out on the field.
Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting, the history of it, and I'm just, you know, we're talking about 7s coming, but looking at the 6 in a row, you know, you've got a 1-point game, then 54-10, then a 3-point game, then a 7-point game, then sorry, my quick math, that's another 7-point game and then a 1-point game. So, I mean, we're within a touchdown, so the rivalry's still been close with the exception of 54-10. I'm wondering how much on, you know, statistical analysis here, sample size of the 6, how much 54-10 might be skewing things.
It does a little bit on the Pac-12, in the Pac-12 group, but when you even if you do 2005 on, which is a good size sample, that's the whole Whittingham era and then mostly Bronco Mendenhall era. Utah's still winning by an average of over a little bit over a touchdown. it's just not as close as we think of it, because these blowouts happen, and because BYU doesn't get them. BYU hasn't beaten Utah by more than a touchdown since 1996. It's been over 20 years since BYU has won by more than 7 points. And that's telling. That's a long time to go without an extra pick six to tack on. I mean, the best they can do is close. And then some of these close games aren't actually as close as you think. I mean, my favorite memory, I'm a pretty young Ute fan. I grew up in New York, so I wasn't a Ute fan.
So when did the Ute fandom start for you?
I would say 2004. I mean, I was in school before then, and I was paying attention, but I am a 2004 Ute fan. Or the first season tickets were 2008, which was a good year to have my first season tickets. I didn't see that coming, and it's been building since.
I mean, that's interesting. I mean, we might have to get at Raider Ute on here from Twitter, just to give us a Utah historian, because you know, we're going to get to talking more rivalry. I mean, I've only been a Utah fan since I started going to the U. I'm originally from Virginia, so uh-huh. Two East Coasters now supplanted in Utah following the Utes. So, you know, 2005 is when it was. In 2008, I was in the Must, uh-huh. enjoying that one. Which, you know, to talk about some of the favorite memories, I mean, that takes you to mine, which is kind of, you know, Sly going over there to break up the Hakko, and BYU comes into
that was such a Rice spectacular Eccles. Moment.
I mean, it was just, you know, being in the stands on the Must, we weren't pleased to see them trying to do the Hakko. And yes, the Must was there, and there were some fans that are yelling, and then they start doing the Hakko, and then we start seeing Sly, and then a couple other teammates start walking to go over there to break it up. I was like, that's right.
I've seen this photograph on Twitter quite a bit lately, but there's this shot of Sly in the middle of the field, and the entire BYU roster is just walking away, and it's this whole sea of blue and white, and this one Ute right there, and they run away, and I think that. That really captures the spirit of the rivalry lately, because it's been like that. It's been these special players that BYU just doesn't have an answer for. Last year they were on the goal line going for that 2-point conversion, and they just didn't have an answer for the defensive line. They've got Taysom Hill, but it doesn't matter, because on that one play, when it really counts, and those four guys are going to do everything they can, they're going to get past the O-line, and there's not going to be anywhere for Taysom Hill to go, and that was the game. For me, something that I've felt watching these games is that a lot of times we'll say these games are close when they don't feel as close as they are. One of the most satisfying wins as a Ute fan for me was 2013, because we knew there was going to be this hiatus, and we knew how big it was going to be, and everybody kept talking about, well, it's, you know, this is the last chance for all of these players to experience the rivalry, and I thought that win was dominant and exactly the way that a Ute fan would want it to be, because it was just physical. It was a low scoring game, so it wasn't ever going to be a blowout. But even when the Cougars were driving just down 7 right at the end of the game, I never really felt that twist in my gut, because I'd watched that whole game and I'd seen the Utes defense just dominate them every single time, every single snap, anytime they needed to. I think that game ended on a pick and then some kneels, and that was the end of it. So not the most exciting game, but for me, I just love that physical, grind it out kind of football, and that was my favorite.
Yeah, so, I mean, look, there's always moments. I'm sure there's going to be moments we're going to remember from this year's game, even depending on what's whether or not we predict, there will be a moment or something that people will remember. Mm-hmm. And but here's the thing that's kind of interesting as we talk about, you know, memories, the closeness of these games versus maybe they're not that close. you know, and specifically since joining the Pac-12, what is your opinion on the value of the rivalry game at this point?
Well, the rivalry game has value. Everybody cares about it. I mean, I get more engagement from fans on social media this week than any other week. And I mean, people care a lot. And I think that the few Ute fans who say, "Oh, I just don't care anymore," well, you're not really telling the truth. You do care. But what I think has changed is that we found a new level of caring. It's like Spinal Tap. The dial goes to 11 now, where there are these games that aren't just about, you know, bragging rights at the office or, you know, at the family reunion, but are about the Rose Bowl and the playoffs and beating USC. Or it's just these extraordinary opportunities to be part of something that is so much bigger and that doesn't have... It's the difference between, you know, having a fight with your brother in the backyard, which is intense and you're never going to forget it, and you're going to get some bruises and it's going to be a big deal, and being a boxer, you know, in Vegas in a real bout. It's suddenly this is the real deal, and it's not that BYU has gotten less important. It's just that there's so many other things that matter more, and there's 9 games a year now that. If Utah wins them, they at least go to the Rose Bowl, and if not, have a chance at winning a national championship every single year. And they don't need this team to lose or that team to lose or this to fall just right. All they've got to do is win the games in front of them, and they're national champions. And the rivalry seems small compared to that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is it's kind of it's not going to be at the end of the season. It's not going to decide a conference title. It's not going to decide whether the Utes are in a BCS bowl. I would like to say that maybe that happened for BYU, but they never could make that happen.
They're not guaranteed to get a BCS bowl. I mean, they have almost no shot at getting a BCS bowl unless they get into some conference.
Well, I'll make the correction that you're talking about the playoff.
BCS bowl.
I'm referring back to the day. But now it's like you said, right? There are bigger aspirations now, and the BYU game doesn't stand to stop those aspirations. So what does it do to the rivalry game? You know, I think it lowers the intensity. In how intense it is. I mean, I will say personally, and maybe I just have learned to manage my Twitter following and my social media interactions better, but I haven't been seeing as many of the the 10 or 5%ers that cause so much of the issues with the vitriol and the hatred. It's interesting to see. I mean, another thing just to say this is I feel like also the players up until recently have really, you know, mouth zipped. You don't give the other team any bulletin board material. We're not going to do anything. But yet, maybe it's just a little bit younger of a team or a little bit more swagger. I'm not 100% sure yet. But the players have been saying a little bit more things. And yeah. And yeah, I think back to like Tyler Huntley. He's like, we just don't lose to that team down south, right? Or are there any others that you can think of? Or
I can't remember exactly what he said, but Darren Carrington had this quote about how he'd been paying attention to what they were going to say, and he was going to show them what was what. I mean, just as much swagger as much confidence as you can think of. I was thinking about this last night, and I realized. These guys, it's not just that these guys haven't lost to BYU, although none of them have. It's that none of the guys who taught them about the rivalry lost to BYU. Most of the players who have experienced losing to BYU graduated 2012 or earlier. You know, guys like, I think Trevor Riley was on the 2009 roster, graduated in 2013. Jordan Wynn was on the 2009 roster. I mean, these are not Derek Tuimago. These are not players who we think of as recent players. And these are guys that the the players now don't even really know. I mean, they might see him on the sideline. They might see him on TV on Sundays. But they're not the people who are sort of imparting to them the spirit of the rivalry. And losing to BYU isn't in the institutional memory of these players anymore. It's the coaches remember, because a lot of them are involved in the rivalry and played in the rivalry on either side and then won or lost those games. But there's something so different about your coach telling you you could lose to a team than the senior who you respect telling you you could lose to a team. It's not history. It's a legend now. It's a scary story that the coaches tell. You know, you pay attention and you respect the process or you might lose to BYU. I mean, it's a boogeyman at this point. And it's pretty hard for a player like Tyler Huntley, who's been kicking tail and taking names since he was 3 years old, to think much of any story like that. And so I don't blame him. My feeling is probably won't have an effect on the game, but it's telling into how long it's been since it's really been competitive.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. I mean, with some of the players' comments, as much as it's swag or confidence, however we want to phrase it, there's a part of me that, you know, maybe this is the pessimist coming out, especially as I see, you know, Dalai Lama selling a seven is coming shirt, and I'm just like, I'm a little worried, right? Because you flip a coin 10 times, it has to land on the other side a few of those times, and you know, here we are at six. I mean, maybe if you want to go back and say 10, you got another a couple times it landed on the other side, but there's just the pessimist in me that says, I don't want to overlook these guys, especially after the LSU game. So I only watched bits and pieces. I can only be entertained but so much with the BYU loss. I mean, heck, ESPNU was planning on rebroadcasting that game last night and instead went to the Tennessee-Georgia Tech game because they would have lost any viewers had they thrown BYU-LSU off.
As an entertainment product, it was hard to watch.
Yeah, so, I mean, after the LSU game, Portland State, and then the Utes playing North Dakota, what are we expecting to see for the rest for this game? I mean, I'll start off kind of my key to the game is, and this is a cop out kind of, everyone says this, right? And the battle's in the trenches, right?
Well, everybody says it because it's right.
The trenches won the game last year.
Uh-huh.
The trenches cause the havoc that creates all the turnovers the Utes have been enjoying many of the years since joining, especially since joining the Pac-12. But so what is this D-line, and then even more so, what is the Utah offensive line going to do playing, blanking out on the BYU player's name?
Taki.
Yes, Taki Taki.
He's good.
He's really good. He's showing he's really good. BYU's defense, 71 snaps against LSU, was pretty freaking impressive against LSU. And that's a legit defense, and we're playing a freshman quarterback and an offensive line that just hasn't gelled yet. Granted, it's been one game.
I think we're going to run a lot. I know that we've been telling the Troy Taylor is an air raid passer story for a while, and I think he is, and I think as we hit into the conference schedule where you start to see defenses with suspect secondaries, you're going to see that. But while the feel of the LSU game was sort of this back-and-forth brawl, they put up 496 yards on BYU. They got a lot of yards, and they all came exactly one way. It was just zone runs right up the middle, hat on a hat. There's some big, strong dudes who go to LSU and play football, and they just dominated them on the defensive line. And I think Utah's O-line, from a talent perspective, is pretty close. I mean, it's not LSU. They're a top-10 recruiting team, and every single one of those guys is an NFL prospect. We're not quite there. Although we did put four in the NFL last year, and I think there's at least three who are going to play in the NFL by the time their career is done. But one thing I noticed reviewing North Dakota film was, man-on-man, this O-line is great. I mean, Paulo can beat anybody, and Uitafe can beat anybody, and Barton can beat anybody. Where they struggled was dealing with stunts and blitzes. So you've got a linebacker coming, and the tackle's got to shift over there, and he kind of passes off his defensive end to the guard. Well, the guard is turned the wrong way, and the defensive end just zips right by and is in the backfield. But that's not a talent issue. That's a coaching issue. And that's when people say, well, the offensive line needs time to gel. They need to communicate better. That's the kind of stuff that they're talking about. North Dakota runs a really well-coached team. They're not the most talented because they're FCS, but they're really well-coached, and they run a really sophisticated defensive front. They had a ton of stunts. They had all sorts of crazy stuff going on that the Utes weren't ready to handle. And when you saw players in the backfield, if you go and you slow it down, maybe one or two times somebody got beat. But almost every time it was somebody missed their assignment. BYU runs a more vanilla, more traditional defense, and if Utah's going to run the ball 60% of the time, and I think they are, it doesn't matter because there's no pass rush. It's just, can our guys push your guys out of the way? And I think the answer to that is yes every single time. And I thought Zach Moss looked spectacular. I don't think that the BYU is going to have an answer for him. And if Utah runs down the field, 14-play, 75-yard drive the first time, just running the ball, and then they get a quick 3-and-out, 4-and-out, 5-and-out, and then they run down the field again, 14-play, run the ball drive, you're going to hear the boo birds going, and everybody's going to be hanging their head. And that's what I think is going to happen, because I don't think BYU can stop them. I mean, can they get to Huntley? Sure. But I don't think they can stop them when they're running the ball with Zach Moss.
Yeah, I mean, it's setting up. I think it's actually going to be a tighter game than I think Utah fans specifically thought after watching that LSU game. I think there's just, I feel like the LSU is probably the bottom.
Right, that's got to be the low point.
That's got to be.
Bad.
It can't be
that's
that.
What
bad.
I
exactly.
Feel
like. And so what's going to happen? So some fun predictions. Question for you. Will there be a targeting call?
Oh, yes. Yes. Not in the first half because Hanneman's out. But as soon as he gets back in, he's going to find somebody and try and take their head off. That guy is a lunatic and should not be on the field. But what are you going to
do? Well, I'm not going to go that far. But they do need it. I mean, Scally yesterday after practice even said they have a drill where they teach them how to lead with their shoulder and
how to go into
the right contact zone. I think... I don't know if they started that drill after Kalani left, but he might want to put that in place down in Provo. Otherwise, what would you say if you were going to pick who the player of the game's going to be, make that player pick and give us a score, and I'll follow with mine.
Well, I think I went with the guy I was saying. I think Zach Moss. I think that Utah is just going to run right up the gut, and Zach Moss is going to beat him over and over and over and over and over again. He's going to get over 100 yards, a couple touchdowns, and just take over the game. Final score, I'm going to say 31-24, Utes win.
Okay. So I'm going to cop out a little bit on my key player of the game, in that I'm saying it's going to be the secondary.
All right.
I think I want to pick a player, and but I think it's really going to be the safeties. I think it's just going to be the group of safeties rotating around, flying around, whether it's Marquise Blair or Corian Ballard or whomever. Those guys are. I just have a feeling that there's just going to be some good hits. Not targeting hits. Good hits.
They're clean.
And
mean.
And there's going to be some turnovers all because of those hits. Hey, I would love for some interceptions, but I just have a feeling it's going to be like a shoulder to the ball, and that ball is going to pop out, and I feel like it's going to happen a few times.
Uh-huh.
That's just my feeling. Gut feel. As far as score, to go back to a classic score of recent rivalry, I think Utah is going to score 35, but I think this time BYU is only going to score 17.
That's
so,
a big win.
I think it's a bigger win. I mean, for me, a blowout is when you're not scoring more than 6 points. For me to give a blowout, it has to be monumentous for me to say about. So to me, that's not quite a blowout, but that's a pretty commanding win. But either way, we'll see what happens. We're both looking forward to watching it and looking forward to talking about it next week. And hopefully we're just not talking in a depressive
loss. Oh, man, that voice. Would be sad. Well, I think the secondary is a good pick. BYU doesn't have a lot of weapons on offense, but that Bushman.
Yeah, the tight end.
He can play. He's 6'5", 200-something, and he's tough to cover. I think Chase Hansen can cover him man-on-man. I think Marquise Blair can cover him man-on-man. You watch the defensive film from North Dakota. Marquise Blair was all over the field. He is so fast, and he's big. He's 6'2", 200-something pounds. I mean, he can handle himself.
Well, to combat that a little bit, something else to keep your eye on him is listening to Sports Webs podcast as much as – Utah fans wouldn't normally listen to a BYU-oriented podcast. This week might be the week to do it. But
for sure.
They had a former BYU quarterback. I'm blanking on his name right now. I can't remember. Sorry, Sports Bros. But he was talking that something he's concerned about with Tanner Mangum is his feet. He's not setting his feet. He's not making the throw. He's getting jittery. He's worried about the pass rush. So if that's the case, you know, more to that secondary point, right? Our D-line gets some rush on him. He's not setting his feet. Sure. He's thrown a little early, trying too much to be perfect. And next you know it, that secondary once again being a huge impact on the game as it has been for several years.
There's a lot of good players back there, and they're going to be here a long time. I think it's going to be a real strength of the Utes over the next few years.
Yeah. All right. Well, this is this edition of UTalk. Please get a hold of us either via Twitter or email utalk@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your feedback, make the show better. And you'll be hearing our next episode next Thursday after the rival game. We'll be looking forward to, I believe, San Jose State. We'll talk to you then.
Mighty Spartans.
Thanks for listening to UTalk. Brought to you by the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Find us on Twitter @UTalk Podcast or email @UTalk@gmail.com.